And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Only one place to start, Brian, and that's Davy Fitz back to his old tricks. He might have calmed down for, I don't know, half a year since his last incursion onto the field. I don't know what he's complaining about. He said that's the second time in a row that we've had a fella taken out of the ball. It happened in the last one here as well, yet there seems to be one rule for one set of management and another for another. I'm actually seething at the officials again. I didn't abuse him. I was making my point quite clearly that our lad had been taken out off the ball. They ended up getting a score, and that's not right. His point is obviously correct. He was taken out off the ball by Jason Flynn. It was wreck. Let Conor Cooney off to get a puck out. We know that. His case was right. But you can't walk in on the field and aggressively shout at officials.
Yeah, fully agree. He reminds me now at this stage of Mario Balotelli. And I'm just waiting for somebody to pull up the T-shirt and say, why all was me? It's just ridiculous at this stage. Look, his point, of course, is valid. There was a player foul, but he can't keep encroaching on the field. And that therein lies the problem. He's constantly at it. He's constantly been berating officials on the line. And I suppose his past is catching up on him.
Yeah.
On this particular instance, he entered the field to play. Like, no matter what way he wants it, even if he says he wasn't, he didn't abuse them, he's still very aggressive in his manner. And as I said, he has passed instances of this. So you can understand from, like, a GA context, from the Referees Association or whatever they're called, like, they want to stamp this out of the game. And it's just Davey seems to be constantly at it. Of course, he'll point that other managers are at it, but not as often, or not as probably in your face as what Davey is constantly.
Yeah, and I don't think they go in onto the field. Like, Brian Cody's definitely given that fourth official his mind, but he's behind the line, you know? Like, I mean,
yeah, I think that's a very valid point. And in fairness, like, Davey, like, I think it was last year in the league, you know, sure, he got an 8-week ban out of that from going in and interfering with the referee. So, you know, he has to learn from that too. You can't go in on the field.
And he's admitted before, Brian, that he went in on the field against Tipperary to get his team going. So, like, I mean,
yes.
And his team needed it at that point as well. I think he's doing this as a tactic to try and fire them up in some way. So, like, I mean, he still can't do that.
Yeah, and once again, it worked yesterday because Wexford responded really well from it. So it seems to be almost a trigger point for the players. Should they need that, they probably shouldn't. But at the same time, it seems to work. I fully take on board what you're saying. The other thing that struck me afterwards is that he actually went back up to the stand and was able to put back on his headphones again and still
communicate.
Communicate and having a massive influence on the game.
He shouldn't have been.
No, he shouldn't have been. And you don't see that in other sports where players have been sent to the stand. So that's something that probably needs to be looked at, you know.
Because it was no punishment for him when he just went back to the very same role. Like, when you're sent off, you can't communicate to the sideline. That's the whole point of being sent off.
Yeah, that's the whole point, man. If you're suspended, you're not supposed to communicate either. So, you know, it seemed to be absolutely no punishment. And in fact, he got his team riled up and got them performing even better by doing so. So no punishment whatsoever. But Davey is always, he feels he's more sinned against than sinning. So, as I said from the outset, it's why always me.
I always wonder what, you see it in soccer as well, and they're absolutely attacking this poor fourth official who had no hand or part in this decision. And, like, I mean, maybe if he was to give out to the fourth official in the first half, and then the fourth official would go into the referee's meeting at half time and say to the referee, geez, actually, he was going mad at that. I think you might have got that one wrong. And it might have had an effect. But telling that fourth official there, am I missing something? Like, what are you even benefiting out of that for?
Yeah, nothing whatsoever. I think it's just a person that you can vent at. It's like he can't do anything, absolutely nothing. He can't communicate with the referee whatsoever. So I don't know. Was that a move to try and stop managers from directing disputes at officials on the day of a match, I don't know, but I wouldn't like to be that fourth official either.
No, it's a terrible job. You're a sitting duck. At least the referee can run around and he doesn't have to listen to it. Like, I mean, this lad's just standing right beside a manager who's giving him an awful time. Like, I don't know how, like, it's the worst job in the GEA, being a fourth official. There's no doubt about that. You have no influence over decisions and you're just getting abuse for anything the referee does wrong. So, like,
it's like an apprenticeship though for the referees, because the referees coming up through the ranks have to do their time as fourth official and then eventually do their time as linesman. So it seems to be an apprenticeship for a rite of passage to try and make it onto the big days.
Yeah, baptism of fire. Come here, I have to ask you about Dunbar's miss, because I remember specifically, if it was last week or the week before, me saying, oh, it was Sean Moran's penalty. I was saying, surely hitting it into the ground, you would lose a bit of pace off it. And that's what happened. Dunbar's, no?
I think he just rushed his shot completely. Like, he hit way too close to the keeper, any side of the keeper whatsoever, and that was in the back of the net. And he just completely rushed it. So,
but from that close in, Brian, surely you don't go off the ground. Surely you're just driving that straight into the net. Or what benefit is there of hitting the ground? Or did he mishit it? Or what do you think?
I think he mishit it. I just think he rushed his shot. In that situation, low into the bottom corner, either bottom corner, is just not stoppable. Yeah. Like, even if you put it higher, like, a goalie will get his hands up high way quicker than he'll get down low. Like, talk to any good keeper that's out there and they'll confirm that. So I get him going low. I've no problem with that. But obviously, to me, he rushed his shot and he just kept it way too close to the keeper.
Jeez, it was a terrible. I don't want to be too hard on him, but it was a terrible miss because the pass was good. He caught it in his eye line. Like, I mean, it's not like he had to go scrambling for the ball and had to, like, he had no, if it was missed from that distance in Gaelic football, you'd be saying that's a terrible miss. In hurling, Jesus Christ, you just have to get any strike on it and the goalkeeper couldn't possibly save that.
Yeah, that's been honest now. That was a terrible miss. And as you're right, you don't want to be hard on anyone. Of course, it was saved, but it was a miss more than a save, definitely.
Yeah.
You can't say he bottled it, but just he was unlucky. You know, that kind of way. He should have scored that. And he'll have nightmares about that last night because he knows himself and he's a much better player than that. So it was a pity from his perspective. But it was real end-to-end stuff at that stage.
At that stage, it
was probably the only exciting part of the game. Apart from probably Davey running on and getting sent off, because the rest of the game was absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
Kevin Foley with a fantastic interception up the other end of the field. When they slowed it down, you saw that he got the hurl in just as Davey Glennon was bearing down and goal. And he's just got it out to the side so they could clear their lines. But yeah, those last couple of minutes were helter skelter.
They were frantic.
Anyway.
Yeah, they were definitely frantic. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was Rory O'Connor's yellow card. Now, you can tell me the technical side of a ball being thrown in between two players, because in my experience of watching hurling, the two players are meant to just pull, and you hear the clash of the ash and one hurl could get broken or whatever, but it seems to be that. Now there seems to be a technique, like, was it Conor Cooney put his foot in, stood forward a little bit, as in to block, to protect the ball from a throw-in, and Rory O'Connor went to pull and he pulled across Conor Cooney's leg and he gets a yellow card. But surely Rory O'Connor's doing what you're supposed to do for a throw-in ball.
Fully agree with you. I think that ruling really needs to be cleared up. As you say, traditionally you threw in the ball and God forgive you if you put your foot in there or any other piece of your body, it was taken off you, and rightly so. But over the last probably 10-15 years, there's been a move towards, you know, trying to, as you said, get your body in front of the ball. You know, there's this kind of jostling and pushing and holding on to the other person's hurl, and you're trying to nearly catch the ball or with your hand, or even try and get one touch into your hand. So I think that needs to be eradicated from the game. It's actually an eyesore. I'd much rather, as the rule says, the players have to have the hurls on the ground, you throw in the ball and the two boys have to pull.
Right.
I think if you do anything else, I think it should be a free, because go back to, you know, the basics of the game. I actually think it's an eyesore, because that's why you have so many people in these rooks then, because it's you're throwing it into an almost rook situation.
And you are.
Players coming flying in. At least we have lads pulling. They have to stand back a few metres or they're going to get the tail end of a swing. And, you know, generally, if they connect, the ball is going to go flying. You know, so no, I bring it back into the clash any day, as you said, the clash of the ash. That's what people want to see, and I think that's what the rules actually state, and they should actually enforce that one.
Yeah, no, you're dead right, because if you're turning your body and trying to get down over the ball, that's the start of a rook, which is exactly what the throw in is meant to be. You're supposed to be trying to free up a rook by throwing in the ball.
And it all depends on the referee too, because it's open to interpretation. It's like some referees get, like what happened yesterday with Johnny Murphy, he gave that free and a yellow card, it's seen as an offside stroke. And another referee might say, no, you put your leg in front of it, play on.
Right.
So it's really open to, you especially see that at club level. Certain referees are just, they might a little bit more agricultural at club level. So I don't think that free would have been given in too many club games.
Is it a brave thing for Conor Cooney to do, or a foolish thing, or what? Or is it, would you not get, imagine you're going to get hurt here if one lad's pulling and you're putting your foot in.
Yeah, of course you're going to get hurt, but sometimes you can buy a handy free by doing it too, by stepping in front of it.
Right. Okay, yeah. No.
You know, so it needs most in certain games, you know. But yeah. And you're trying to read the referee as well, because Johnny was very officious yesterday. I thought he blew for a lot of soft stuff and didn't let the game run at certain times. So maybe Conor Cooney had actually caught on to that and put his leg in and said he'd get a handy free here. But you're dead right, you'll get a right good smack for yourself.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't think I would have tried those tactics. I'd just continue on with
football, the
clash of the ash. Softer. I'd be happy enough and getting that shock up through the hurl.
I can assure you, you wouldn't have been going into the clash of the ash back in the day. You would have been hanging out the sides.
Listen, I'm a mouthpiece who survived club football in Leash, so listen, there's no doubt I know how to handle myself on a Gaelic Gaelic pitch, either one. Anyways, having my mouth and playing hurling would not be the smartest thing to do. So I learnt that from a young age. Come here, what did you make of Cummins saying that Galway had figured out Fanning's puck out signals?
Yeah, and they did. And like, being honest, as I said last week, Dublin figured them out as well, and they seem to be persisting with this kind of, I won't say a short puck out, but you know, a tactical puck out, and they're looking for runners all over the field. And Cummins made a big ordeal about half time about the way he's striking the ball, and you know, he's right, but the problem is when it goes wrong, it goes horribly wrong. And as you've seen, that it was intercepted a couple of times, and Galway should have had a goal on it. Conor Cooney was a bit too nonchalant on his shot. He should have had that rattled in the back of the net.
He was nonchalant.
Yeah. Going back to the puck outs, yeah, look, that technique is very difficult, and as I said, it looks class when he's pulling it off, but as I said, when it goes wrong, it's completely wrong. But I think Wexford, they're probably overdoing it in tactics across the board in terms of their puck out strategy, in terms of their withdrawing all the men back into the defence at certain times, and then pushing them all up in waves, as I keep saying, very much like football. But I actually think they have a really good core team there. I think they've 12 or 13 of some really top class hurlers, and we're just not seeing them in the game enough. I don't think those tactics serve those players well, and I think they're holding them back a little bit. Even like, I think we're not seeing or very little from.
Attention has started in Miss Kalecki's room. Please report immediately.
I'm sure you can hear that in the back. Yeah, lunchtime detention has started here. I'm not needed to go for once. So I don't think we're seeing enough from Conor McDonald. You know, he's only getting a pint from play and the odd goal every now and again. I think the same from Rory O'Connor, he's top class forward out there, you know. And I think he should be on the freeze as well. I think Lee is too erratic on the freeze. And the likes of Dermot O'Keefe is a fantastic hurler too. And you know, I just don't think the Waterford tactics, Wexford tactics, while they are being hugely competitive, I actually think they can be even better if they were given a little bit more traditional style.
Yeah, no, maybe we'll talk about that. Was it Jim Bulger, anyways, is on the same wavelength as me and you on that one, anyway, Brian, which we'd be delighted to hear. We'll talk about that in part two, because I think that's interesting. But just a thing on Brendan Cummins. So he said Eamon O'Shea taught him the puck out technique, and the puck out technique was to have strike through the ball, always have the same technique, and that all makes perfect sense. But Brendan Cummins never would have pucked it out short. So for me, looking at the technique of a long puck and a snappy kind of wristy kind of short pass, they're completely different techniques, right? You wouldn't be striking through a ball that's going 10 metres the same as you would one that's going 90 metres.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Brennan, I think, was trying to make the point of poking it into the wind, maybe. Of course, you need to get your whole body behind it and you need the same stroke every single time. But I think he was a little bit off on that one, because he was on the wrong wavelength, because Mark Fanning was trying to do something completely different. As you said, he was trying to hit, you know, a very measured, we won't say short puck out, but a tactical puck out to cornerbacks, wing backs, even midfielders.
Yeah, he was trying to snap them out there rather than actually drive
exactly.
them.
Exactly. So that's totally different from opening your shoulders and trying to drive the ball down the field.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right. Kerry Westmeath, right? So this was a great result from Offaly. You'd be delighted to see. I'm sure you were surprised by the result, but really happy about it. We talked to Shane Conway last Thursday on the show, and Kerry are down Fionnan Mackesy, Dahi Griffin, Brandon Barrett, who all left the squad to go to America. He had to bring in, Fintan O'Connor had to bring in the recently retired Pat Kelly back into the panel for the Westmeath game. He said, Paul Costello tweaked ligaments in his knee and should be back in a couple of weeks. Jason Diggins is out and Fionnan Mackesy is gone to America. So that's our whole half-back line from the league final, not available for the Antrim game or the Westmeath game. So there's two more names on top of the three that I mentioned at the start. So they're down to the bare bones, Kerry, really. To go up to O'Connor Park is an incredible result. I looked at the scores out of this on the Buff Egan Snapchat, which had been uploaded to YouTube. I'm not on Snapchat, but this looked bloody to'd and fro'd and looked like an absolute classic of a game.
Yeah, and you know, it's a brilliant result from Kerry, but you know, you said you spoke to Shane Conway. Like, there is one of the top forwards in the game, and he's been at it now for a couple of years, and he definitely did it with UCC and they won the Fitzgibbon earlier this year. So he's a household name for anyone in hurling circles, and you know, you're delighted to see the likes of him, you know, shooting the lights out, you know, time after time, and he's top class. And there was rumours even of being muted at one stage that there was talks of him transferring to Cork. Now, it could all be just talk on the grapevine. It could be absolutely no truth in that, but you wouldn't be surprised at the same time, because this guy is a top class hurler and would really suit Cork style. But brilliant result. You know, Kerry didn't have a good day in their first day out against Antrim, but I suppose you have to take some logistics into that. Kerry had to go to literally the length of the country up to Antrim, and it obviously had an effect on their performance. So
yeah, just to cut you off there, they had to take the Friday off work, the Kerry players, because it was so long a way up, and the game was obviously on a Saturday. Like, I mean, that's incredible that you'd have to take the day off.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we talk about this amateur status and the need for semi-professionalism. Well, therein lies a case in point, but it's not one of the big teams, so it's not really documented too well. So again, that's for another debate, but it just shows the commitment though that these boys have for Kerry hurling. I'm good friend with a former Kerry hurler, Tyke Flynn, there, and you know, he's hugely passionate and you know, you can't stress, like, people are a little bit dismissive towards Kerry hurling because obviously they're such a football county, but there's a pocket of hurling country in Kerry, and they're as passionate as any county that is out there, and as good a hurlers as anywhere that's out there. Kerry's problem down to the years is trying to get them all pulling in the one direction, because obviously they've a hugely competitive club championship, and it can get quite nasty at times, and it can spill into the inter-county setup. So when they get them all pulling in one direction, these boys are well able to hurl.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. So it was a huge shock, because it was funny enough, I was talking to Damien from Paddy Power here last Thursday, and he said for the league final it was even money, and for this game, just on the back of two results in between for both teams, Westmeath had gone in at 1-4 favourites, and I think Kerry were 7-2 or 9-2 or something. So it was unbelievable that it would change that much. But it was interesting.
And it's not often Paddy Power getting wrong now, let me tell you.
No, it is not. It is not. Definitely not. So Kerry Mayor Fuerna got sent off. So this is a big controversy. Obviously, we didn't see any of it on the Sunday game as usual, because RTE just go for the glamour Munster Championship. Although they did show Leinster Championship, and it didn't cover itself in glory yesterday. We'll talk about that in part two. But the Kerry Mayor Fuerna got sent off. Now, this is an interesting one, because Fintan O'Connor was talking after the game. So he's trying to explain why he got sent off. So he said the Westmeath player just handed him the flag, and he was pointing at one of our lads to do something. And in fairness, it looked like he was waving the flag in front of the fella taking the sideline, which he wasn't. Interesting. He said the Westmeath. Yeah, he said the Westmeath Mayor Fuerna got sent off in the league final, which they won. So maybe getting the Mayor Fuerna sent off is the way forward. Now, Fintan O'Connor, I'm sure, is an honourable man, and I spoke to him on the show before, and he's a really sound fella. But if he thinks I'm going to believe that the Mayor Fuerna was just using the flag to point at one of his players and shaking it in front of the Westmead player. I'm not buying that one, Fintan. What do you think? We haven't seen this, obviously, but I think that's...
We haven't seen it, so, but the reading of that, no, I'm not buying it either. Sorry, no.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to leave you with one more here, Brian, before we go into analyse that game. You can comment on it or you don't have to comment on it. And I'm just going to say that someday I want my partner Itzy to look at me the way Anthony Daly looks at Joanne Cantwell.
No comments.
Okay, we'll come back in part two.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Yeah, so Brian, like we were saying in part one, this wasn't the greatest advertisement for the Leinster Hurling Championship. We were trying to push to get some Leinster Hurling matches on the television. We got one on television. Look, obviously the wind had a huge bearing on the game, and Salt Hill, I don't remember too many classic matches in Salt Hill. There was an awful lot of wides, I think 30 in total between the teams, an awful lot of unforced errors. It actually reminded me of the game I left in O'Connor Park between Laois and Westmead with a really strong wind, where it was just non-stop mistake after mistake, and you're just watching it going, Jesus, they're not handling these conditions well at all.
No, it certainly wasn't, and add in the tactics of Wexford and Galway trying to counteract them, and it was a very poor game to watch, to be honest. I was actually bored watching it, and you know, as you said, all the wides, all the unforced errors, and I suppose the referee blowing the whistle quite a number of times as well. It wasn't a great advertisement for not just the Leinster Championship, but just hurling in general. It was definitely a weekend where the football matches were more exciting than hurling. It's not often I say that, so I don't say that lightly.
No, it's not easy for you to say that. And Galway went with Sean Loftus as the sweeper, so we knew that Wexford obviously would be giving them a sweeper. Usually it's Aidan Hart who has played that role so often for Galway because he's a great utility man. Unusual for them to change that, was it?
Yeah, especially like Sean Loftus is close to breaking into the team for the last couple of years, but he's a very good ball player, so I suppose they obviously had practiced this quite a lot in-house, so they would have come up with this idea and maybe trying to allow the more experienced players to be the man markers. But yeah, I agree with you. Aidan Hart or even Pádraig Mannion for me would have been more ideal as a sweeper. I felt they overdone the short passing a couple of times when they did actually hit the ball in long to cause Wexford trouble, and I thought they should have done that quite a lot more than what they were actually at.
Yeah, because I was reading Brendan Cummins in The Independent, and he was saying that so Sean Loftus obviously was their sweeper and Foley was the sweeper for Wexford, but Cathal Mannion's role, who'd been playing midfield, and he ended up playing wing forward but in a really withdrawn role, so you're almost giving Wexford two defenders then, so that tactically that didn't make much sense to be dropping Mannion back so deep.
It didn't, and being honest, I was down at the Wexford Galway game last year in Wexford Park. I was on duty, and Galway put Johnny Glynn edge of the square, and they literally went route one with every single ball.
Yeah.
And their full forward line had Conor Whelan and Conor Cooney as well, and they just towered over the Wexford defenders, and Conor Cooney in particular had a great game down there. So I was surprised they didn't go back route one, particularly in the first half when they had the wind. I know Johnny Glynn didn't start, but sometimes you have to think horses for courses. Like, Johnny Glynn really works in this type of game. So if he was able to come on, I think they really should have started him and have that option. But probably Wexford won the toss too and elected to hurl into the breeze in the first half and try and keep it somewhere tight. But, you know, when you see them when he's scoring 4 points in the first half, you know you're not watching a great game. But look, Davey makes no bones about it. He makes no excuses to anyone. He doesn't care what anyone else thinks about style. It's all about results from his perspective. But it's definitely not one for the purist anyway.
No, because we saw no real quality. Like, I mean, I saw, I think, did Galway only score 2 points from play in the second half? But one of them was from Jason Flynn on 67 minutes. It was a really important one. And it was a brilliant diagonal ball by Hussey. And you're just looking at that going, like, I know conditions are tough, but that's one moment of quality in a full bloody game.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying about they really need to have played more diagonal ball and long ball inside, because even Johnny Glynn came out and caught a ball and won a free and stuff like that. So, you know, they needed more of that, where they went a little bit more route one. It was going away from probably the style that Micheál Dunne has had over the last few years, and a contradiction to his style. So I think he overthought the way the Wexford played and tried to counteract it. They had a big tactical battle in Salt Hill, in the league as well, and Galway won comprehensively enough. But you have to remember they had Joe Canning that day too, and he took a lot of watching. He had a big influence on the game that day, and Colin Mannion coming from midfield had a much bigger bearing on the game as well, whereas he was actually quiet enough when he was at wing forward yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know. Micheál O'Donoghue said after game, with 10 minutes to go, I'd have taken a draw, and I'm sure he would. When Sean Murphy got that point to put Wexford ahead, geez, you'd imagine Wexford should have won that. And then we had Dunbar obviously missed that goal chance. We had Lee Chin, who missed another one, who didn't have his radar in the whole game. And really, you'd probably be looking at Wexford kicking themselves for not winning that game.
Oh, definitely. Wexford should have won that game, hands down. They had the chances, as you said, and Lee Chin's radar was definitely off. He was very poor on the frees. As I said earlier, I think Rory O'Connor should be hitting him. I think he's a much more reliable free taker. You know, Lee kind of forces his strikes. In fairness to him, he scored the hardest one he had in the first half out underneath the stand.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference between hitting long-range frees and hitting close-in frees. Long-range frees, you can kind of, there's less pressure whatsoever, and you can almost just have the attitude of let's have a go, follow through on your strike, and you know, not hope for the best, but obviously, you know, there's just less pressure, whereas close in you have to be extremely accurate. You can sometimes take them you know, in more narrow angles and etc, but you just have to be more tuned in, and you have to be very careful in your strike when you're closer in. And I just think Rory O'Connor is much better at taking them. But to go back to the original point, yeah, Wexford had their chances, and they should have seen out that game, because they had all the momentum in that second half, especially playing with that wind. You know, so Wexford definitely left that one behind them. But after 50 minutes, it was really boring for a long time.
Yeah.
But I suppose Galway just didn't do enough to actually put Wexford away.
No, both teams were terrible, if we're being honest about it. Like, I mean, both teams were really, really, really poor. Like, I mean, they didn't make any comment on the COCOM yesterday on... Davey only made two subs, a double substitution in the 49th minute. Now, Jack O'Connor came on for Paddy Foley. Is that a half forward for a half back? And Paul Morris for Aidan Nolan, which is a corner forward for a midfield half forward. That looked to me like a very aggressive substitution. And I was wondering, looking at the game, has he done something with his shape now? Has the sweeper gone off? And it looked like they left more forwards up. It looked like they were getting more change up front. Maybe I'm overthinking it because of the substitutes, because I look back at one stage and they did have a sweeper back. So I'm not sure. You really need to be at the game to know exactly what he did with that double substitution, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think they did away at the sweeper, but it seems to be a clear tactic, and I saw this firsthand against Dublin the week before, that they start pushing up the field an awful lot more. So the halfbacks particularly start moving up the field. Paddy Foley was added last week, and so was Matthew O'Hanlon. So maybe Jack O'Connor coming in was going into a more advanced position, and they allowed the sweeper to sit back, and they kind of just go for it. And, you know, Davey was talking during the week about his philosophy of hurling is very much like Johan Cruyff's, and it's free hurling. So maybe that's what he means, because up to around the 50, 55 minute mark, it's very conservative type of hurling. It's, as I said, it's football tactics. When you're playing one forward inside, everyone is hanging back. But it seems to be a complete shift in emphasis then, in it going down the home straight with about 20 minutes to go. Because even you saw Sean Murphy there bursting forward a couple of times. He got a great score again. So it's definitely a change in the way. So they obviously have a number of systems that they're going through.
Yeah. Why doesn't he just go for it from the start? Like, I mean, I always remember Davey with Clare. And you didn't really know from game on game what way he was going to line up. Like, I mean, with Wexford, he seems to be more predictable. Is that fair?
Yeah. The bit I don't like about it, and look, he's entitled to do what he wants, but the bit I don't like about it is he kind of goes on that Wexford were useless before he came in. And he kind of implied that yesterday as well, that they were at a low ebb and he's after look at the results he's getting from them and pulling them up. Like, Wexford have really good hurlers. You know, they were very competitive when Liam Dunn went in, and, you know, they even beat Davies Clare.
Yeah.
And they've won 321s in a row, and like, these aren't mugs. Like, these are really good hurlers. As I said, I think they have 12 or 13 really top class hurlers. And I just think he's very on the defensive, because if you say a word about him or his tactics and the way that he's setting up Wexford, he goes on the attack straight away. And as you said, Jim Bulger obviously put his views out, and he was shot down straight away. He feels he has to answer back anyone that has a go.
Yeah, it's funny when he's replying back to a horse trainer about his tactics.
And tell them to stick to his own sport.
Stick to your own sport. It's pure Davy, though. Like, I mean, Davy just wouldn't lie down for anyone. Like, I mean, he's a little bit like Mourinho like that. He's just like, he completely gets on the defensive, and anyone that says anything about him is getting run over, and that's it. What about Galway then? They're not firing at all, are they? Like, I mean, it's weird what's happened to them. Like, I mean, I don't even want to mention Joe Canning. We know his loss. That's very, very obvious. But surely he can't have been gluing them together that much. I know Joe Cooney played wing back, which is not an unusual position for him. Obviously, winning puck outs on the half forward line is now a problem where it wasn't when the two Joes were there.
Yeah, and the one thing they had when they won the All-Ireland was they had six massive men that all could hurl, and they had another one or two that could come in as well. So they could go direct, and it really suited them. And the burden wasn't just on Joe. Now, obviously, every one of them were in great form as well. There has to be an element of players have lost a little bit of form, or can't really say hunger, because, you know, that's very intrinsic and you can't really measure that. But you know, Joe obviously was holding the forwards together on the days that it went bad.
Yeah.
But they really need some leaders at the moment. They're caught with a couple of similar type players, so they're confused over what to do with Niall Burke, Conor Cooney, Jason Flynn, whether to start Johnny Glynn. He's supposed to be home now full time, so they really do need to start him again. And they need to start getting more out of those hurlers, as I said. I was surprised to not see Conor Cooney on the frees from the start. I think he's an excellent free taker. He was hitting them on and off with Joe there for a couple of years. He's very good at them. But they seemed to have went with Niall Burke. That didn't work, and then ended up going to Jason Flynn. So Conor Cooney's down there as number four on the free taker list, which can eat away at you if you're a player then as well. You're nearly thinking, well, I'm number four on the pecking order just in general, so I'm not even guaranteed my place. So for me, Conor Cooney is an automatic starter if he's in form, and he should be. I would have had him hitting the freeze, because he should be seen out 70 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's weird with Galway. So they had an identity as a big, physically imposing team who pucked the ball out long and maybe played a traditional style, and now they don't have those same maybe leader players, and maybe they're stuck not really knowing how to suit maybe Jason Flynn's game, how to suit Niall Burke's game, Brian Concannon's game. And it seems to be a situation like that.
Yeah, and they're not getting enough from midfield then as well. David Burke is after having a long year with St. Thomas's as well. And, you know, he's all action. He's flat, kind of player alongside Joe Canning. They really work well together, and they're on the one wavelength all the time. So maybe he's feeling his loss a little bit as well. So, but they need David Burke back flying it as well, and popping up with 2 or 3 points of play. Now, he did a couple of wides yesterday, uncharacteristically, but you know, they need him firing around the place. And Johnny Cohen starting to put in some hard shifts then as well. So they need a little bit more around that middle of the field. So yeah, across the board, it's not impressive from Galway. They've had a very substandard league. They were quite poor, and this form has been carried into the championship. So it's going to take something big, and they've two really tough games ahead of them. You know, going to Parnell Park and going to Nolan, obviously, that those two games, like, they're going to be really tough, and they still have a bit of work result there.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. All right, we'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
A lot of people do say, what do you love about hunting? They do say. Is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things, right? Absolutely.
All right, Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. So there's no nominations. I'm on my own here for Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend because Brian was having some problems with his Skype line, and we thought it'd be better off to let him go. He'll be on a better Skype line next week. So I'll just finish off Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. So there's only one winner anyways. There's no nominations from the game in Salt Hill. I didn't think anybody deserved one. I thought Conor Whelan got man of the match, but he was poor in the second half, wasn't really in it. He seemed almost embarrassed to get man of the match in the post-match interview. So the Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend goes to Shane Conway. He got 13 points against Kerry. I saw them on Buff Egan's Snapchat. He got 7 frees, 265s. He got the last 2 points of the game, one from play and one from 65, I think it was, and that's what was the difference between the two teams. Incredible how whenever he gets the ball, he's just surrounded by 4 or 5 Westmeath players, and he has vision and he's able to pick out a player who's free if he's been surrounded by that many players. So just judging off the Buff Snapchat, an outstanding game from Shane and well worthy. Talking of the Buff Egan, I'm not on Snapchat, but I saw his Snapchat, somebody had it up on YouTube. And it was fantastic to be able to see all the scores of the game. So fair play to Buff. I'm not sure what this chucky ducky quack quack thing was with the duck. So I'm going to have to find out what's going on with that. But speaking of Buff, Buff wasn't happy about the Sunday game last night. So not only did the Sunday game not show 1 second of highlights from the outstanding Joe McDonagh game between Weston Mead and Kerry, they didn't even give the result. Despite there only being one other hurling game this weekend, it's all about the fancy Dans. You showed what you care about hurling. I think Buff was in the same situation as I was after the Laois-Offaly game, that when your own county is involved in such a great game and the whole country can't see it and can't appreciate how well your county has done, it probably highlights the sense of injustice. But I suppose from Buff Egan's Snapchat, I got to see some sort of games anyways. But I absolutely take his point that the Sunday game has to show highlights of the second tier in hurling, because that's what the Joe McDonagh Cup is. There's only 9 teams in tier 1, and I don't see why they can't show the 5 teams in tier 2, show a highlights package. It's completely unfair on the players and the teams involved who are doing their best. They're traditional hurling counties and they're in tier 2 trying to get into tier 1. And it doesn't make any sense why it's just being ignored. It's for me, it's not good enough for a public service broadcaster to completely disregard 5 teams in a tier 2 of hurling. It's not all about, can't all be about commercial interest with a public service broadcaster, because it's not just a commercial station. It's a public service station that is paid for by funded in a massive part by the taxpayer. So it's not all, it shouldn't all be about profits. It should be about showing players from all over the country. And I think that's completely wrong from RTE just to disregard the tier 2 competition on their highlight show. And I've made my thoughts pretty clear on that one, but obviously it's not changing anything like that. So the Joe McDonagh Cup players should try and keep their heads up and battle on, and maybe it'll be sold a little bit better in a couple of years when the broadcast rights are up again. Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll talk to you on Thursday with a preview show. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later when we're not